Hi, I'm Bonnie Burkert, and this is Truth Be Told, Transformation, exploring tools for transformation to live your highest truth. So one of the ways I feel that truth can be explored is through visuals, right? So we hit on a number of different medium, and there's nothing like film, the combination of visual and audio, to really help tell that story and to help us transcend. So I've invited today a filmmaker that I had a chance to see a recent documentary. His name is Courtney Asell. And welcome, Courtney.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thanks for having me.
Hi. It's an honor. So, Courtney, you've got a really interesting body of work, and you strike me as somebody who has really just kind of come into documentary filmmaking through a sheer love of the medium and visuals and the actual making of the film, not just the storytelling, but the craft itself. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, and then I also wanted to interweave, how did it get to the point of some of the mystical work that you're doing with your filmmaking?
Sure. Well, it's actually really interesting to think about now, or what, I haven't thought about that connection in a bit. One of the first documentaries I ever made was about my father's final days of life. He was in hospice care with prostate cancer, and he allowed me to document his final days. And that was in 2007, I believe. And he was a religious man. And so it was documenting someone at the end of their life while dealing with the elements of religion as well, because he was a reverend. It was quite a fascinating journey, and it was pretty spiritual and powerful. And I just developed a love for documentary filmmaking, because I love exploring like different things about humanity that like we might pass by, or we might walk past one of these days, and like we don't really turn our heads to it anymore. I think most of the people have their faces on their phones.
That's true.
But I love, like, I'll always stop to notice certain interesting things or interesting people or people who inspire me or places that inspire me, because a lot of my documentaries are location driven and location inspired as well. So that's kind of where that came from, that obsession came from. But going to what you were saying, is it's interesting with the metaphysical work. I feel like there's a direct correlation between that metaphysical work and my beginning stages as a documentary filmmaker with my father's film, because as one could see in my movie Hollywood, he plays a big part in it as well. So
right, that's interesting on a lot of fronts, and I'm going to pick up on, you know, it's funny you mentioned how people are probably not looking around themselves and they're looking at their phone.
Sure.
But what's funny,
right,
is they might be looking at their phone at something like what you've created or what I'm creating.
Well,
here,
I would be
or something
honored,
like that.
And you know, I guess then they get a pass.
It's no, but it's an interesting way, because somebody like yourself reminds people, I guess, what is out there and helps them perhaps see it.
Well, it's almost like being a painter, and I'm really inspired by Van Gogh. I'm really inspired by Jackson Pollock. And when I go for hikes every day, and when I'm in nature, my friends think I'm crazy, but I always like have to stop, and like I love to like look at the tree bark and look at the way certain leaves are formed, and I'm really obsessed with textures and things like that. And for some reason, and again, like in most of my work, you'll always find plants and trees and things like that. I find that there's like kind of this holiness, or there's this mystical elevation in nature. And so when I'm making a documentary, even if the subject matter is something, a person, or, you know, there's always going to be nature involved. And I find that to be like a really spiritual, mystical situation. So I always considered making films like very therapeutic and meditative.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And I certainly share your view on nature and whatever, just sort of the how it brings us back to the here and now, and
yeah,
a higher place as well. So I definitely love that. And in I've only had a chance to take a quick look at some of your other work besides Hollywood, which we will talk about in a moment. And so two thoughts. One, some of the, if you go to your website. Remind us, Courtney. It's Courtney Sell
Courtney Sell Visions.
com. Right. And you have a section on metaphysical films, correct?
Yeah.
And I mean, having a look at those, music plays a really big part, but there's a wash. Right. And I can see, you know, you referenced a few of the artists, the fine artists that are influential to you. So you would see that. And I think that's an interesting way to, it's almost a meditation. It's a visual meditation that you're offering us.
Thank you. Through that book. That's incredible. In fact, through the Philosophical Research Society, I did a 45-minute experimental abstract film where this really incredible friend I have named Kristen Palumbo, she plays the sound bowls.
Yeah.
And she did the soundtrack with sound bowls. So we did a screening at the Philosophical Research Society where people could come and meditate while the film was playing to her Sound Bath soundtrack.
Great idea.
So it's definitely like connecting the dots of, and I was calling it at that point, I think it was called Films to Heal. So okay. It was a way to utilize the medium that I'm obsessed with in a helpful, beneficial, spiritual manner.
That's amazing. Okay, great. So you mentioned the Philosophical Research Society. Please tell us a little bit more about what that is for people that don't live in Los Angeles.
Right. And it's the most special place in the universe for me. It was formed in 1934, I believe. It was founded in 1934 by a spiritual author named Manly Palmer Hall, who actually he just passed. It was his passing anniversary yesterday, incidentally enough. And he was this great spiritual author who wrote The Secret Teachings of All Ages, amongst many other incredible books. And he founded the Philosophical Research Society as a space where seekers can come, and it's one of the best metaphysical libraries in the country for sure. Comparative religion, Gnosticism, Crowley, magic, and you can find anything you want there. It's really incredible. If you're a seeker, that's where you want to be. And so I dove pretty hard into that place, and I was kind of like this volunteer, you know, unpaid employee, because I was there every day just doing work. And I made, you know, and Manly Palmer Hall was someone who I had been reading since I was 16 years old. I read The Secret Teachings when I was about 16 years old. And so there I was able to be influenced and inspired by, I read the Bhagavad Gita, some of the Upanishads. And it's just a place in California in Los Feliz, off of Los Feliz Boulevard. And I suggest everybody go and check it out, because it's been quite a powerful place for me to be. It's really, really an incredible spot. And
what
they have an auditorium,
background.
So they screen films. And yeah.
I mean, so this is a beautiful story that I didn't know about you, because I first found out about Courtney when seeing his documentary, Hollywood, and there at the Philosophical Research Society. And little did I know that you'd had that long legacy. So congratulations to get to the point of being a volunteer, and then now you are a filmmaker in their library, whose work is in their library, correct?
It's a huge honor. And in fact, we always joked that you find the PRS, a seeker finds the PRS when they least expect it.
Cool.
And so I never even had heard about the Philosophical Research Society when I moved to LA. And my friend Travis told me about it. And so I went, and I was immediately, you know, I was smitten. I was definitely taken by it. And you couldn't keep me away from there. And interestingly enough, I had the honor of, when Hollywood had its first in-person premiere at the Philosophical Research Society in the auditorium, I was so nervous about the screening because I have social anxiety disorder and I don't like being around big crowds. So when the people were watching the movie, I needed somewhere to hide. And so I actually got to sit in Manly P. Hall's old office, which was my dear friend Greg's office. He was the president at that time. And I sat there and meditated in Manly P. Hall's office in his chair while a movie about him was playing in the auditorium to like a sold out audience. And it was like one of the most surreal moments of my life, because being a huge fan and having being guided through his work, it was like, wow, this really came full circle.
I love that. That is a great, great story of manifestation. Well done, and hopefully inspiring to everybody, seriously. So I really, really like the documentary, and it largely Thank focused you. On my neighborhood in Los Angeles, in Beechwood Canyon, and the long legacy that this particular area of Hollywood has for spiritual societies, and going back to the 1920s, perhaps earlier. So take it from there, please.
I mean, Beechwood Canyon is it's located directly underneath the Hollywood sign. So most people would observe it or assume that it's just a really superficial, vapid area. And as it turns out, it was home of Crotona Institute, which was the first theosophical society, I believe, that was founded in the USA. And it was founded by Annie Besant and A.P. Warrington. And when the theosophists came to Beechwood Canyon, they completely formed this community of spiritualism that just blossomed. And it's the contrast to what we believe Hollywood as being this like really vapid, you know, just fake thing, to the fact that it was formed essentially through a spiritual organization or group or commune or whatever you want to call it, is fascinating to me. And what had happened was then there's like other spawn-offs. Well, not spawn-offs, because they weren't spawned from the Theosophical Society, but like just down the street from Crotona was the Vedanta Society. And then just up the street is the Philosophical Research Society. And, you know, then the Besant Lodge right on Beechwood Drive, that became the new Theosophical headquarters for quite some time. It was an old silent movie theater. And I just found that that's a really interesting idea for me. And Dr. Stefan Heller, who is the president of the Ecclesia Gnostica, he has this vision in the film. He talks about it in an interview, but he calls it the New Alexandria.
Oh, wow.
Because all of these spiritual ideas were blossoming in like the early 20s, 1920s, right. Even earlier than that. But and what had happened, though, what was really curious to me is the moment when Hollywood, as we know it now, came in. It was like a shark bite. Like they came in and they like basically like pushed the theosophists out. So the theosophists end up going to Ojai. And there's still remnants in Beechwood of that, like Crotona and stuff. And my dear friend Leanne, she's a historian for theosophy and she lives at Crotona. So there's still elements of it there, but they didn't like the idea that, you know, Hollywood was becoming this debaucherous area, because they were seeing Hollywood as, it wasn't even called Hollywood at that time, I don't believe, because I think that was.
Yeah, because the sign went up later.
I mean, the developer.
Right.
Yeah, the sign got up later. So there's actually really cool old photos of Beechwood before the sign was up, and there's just a couple houses where Crotona is, and that's like where the Theosophists began. So they saw it as a really spiritual, mystical vortex, essentially. I want to say a vortex.
Right on.
Portal. I would say a portal.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah.
I had somebody in my backyard saying on the hill behind my house saying that she was feeling vortex energy, you know, right around in there. So.
Yeah, and you know, being a resident of Beechwood and have lived there for so long, or not so long, it's like been like about 4 years, 4 or 5 years. I've never felt, other than New Orleans, maybe New Orleans has a vibe, but Beechwood, like just Beechwood, like if you get into LA, it's LA, but the moment you get onto Beechwood, Beechwood Drive, and you're walking through Beechwood, there's this complete vibe, there's a feeling. It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
I've been there for a long time, and I don't know where else I'd go at this point.
It's in my heart. I'll have my ashes scurried over Beechwood somewhere, I'm sure.
Cheers. Right on. I love it. Yeah. Well, we're not going to talk about that because you're in the here and now. So let's go back to the 20s. One of my takeaways from the film was you talking about the interest in what Hollywood was making movies, those early Hollywood, some of the subject matter they were covering. And you yourself also did horror movies, right? But wasn't there an interest? I mean, for example, Nosferatu was
huge interest.
Was that right around that time?
So there are certain films that were directly influenced by Theosophy. I can name some. Some can't come to mind, but like in the early days of Hollywood, like as Dr. Heller says in the movie, in the documentary, everyone in Hollywood was talking about Theosophy.
Yeah.
Producers were talking about Theosophy. And so there's elements in a lot of those early silent films that deal directly with theosophical ideas. And what's really interesting is there was a man, Rupert, I can't remember his last name, I'm fading on this, but he lived at Crotona. He was a film producer, and he was actually the director of Lon Chaney's Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
And he was really into Theosophy. And so the merge of theosophical ideas in Hollywood was very profound in the very beginning.
I'm going to stop you right there and ask you, and you may or may not be informed on this, but what are some of the concepts in Theosophy?
Oh, I won't talk about that.
What, you don't want to talk about it?
Yeah, no, it's too complicated. It would take a whole other podcast.
Oh my God.
Even summarizing that is just, it's yeah.
Well, some of the broad strokes, because I named the show sort of Exploring the Paranormal. And, you know, it's interesting to take a look at that word because you use the word metaphysical on your site. And I think the term occult would be applicable to some of those earlier films. So I'm really, using an interplay of these different terms that perhaps could have informed filmmaking then, as well as whatever your personal beliefs are right now, and
how mystical and spiritual beliefs and reincarnation. Big thing. And I think what had happened was because when Madame Blavatsky wrote, you know, The Secret Doctrine, I think what happened was it was like such a epic book that would inspire, it's almost like the Bible. So it would inspire all these storytellers and all these creative types to, you know, jump in and pull from and take ideas. And I think that's what happened in Hollywood. I honestly do. I think like it's kind of like they're adapting their own ideas because it's kind of up in the air a lot of, well, it's not the stuff that's in The Secret Doctrine, but there's a lot of stuff in there that like you could have fun with as an artist creatively as your own interpretation. And I think Hollywood definitely utilized a lot of that. And I think if you watch a lot of those movies, I'm not a theosophist, so I can't, that's why I won't speak on it, because I'm not a theosophist. But if you were to watch some of those early movies, if you were really into, you know, that idea, you would definitely find a lot of elements in there.
Right.
And I think it was because it was like such a creative, there was ways that you could work it into creative storytelling.
Yeah.
As Madame Blavatsky did.
Right on. And I mean, I think, you know, I mentioned the film, the Fritz Lang film, Nosferatu. So that was also another, you know, that was scary.
Murnau.
Oh, sorry. Bad.
Yeah. No.
We're going to edit that out for sure. So, but I guess I kind of want to go and take a look at what was going on in general all over the world with sort of a consciousness expansion and of subject matter with relatively new medium.
Right. You mean in like the birth of cinema?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that is really fascinating to think about. Obviously, in Germany, they were doing their thing. And George Millais, I think I'm probably saying his name wrong, but he was a practicing magician who did a trip to the moon, one of the arguably first films. And I think what was happening is with this new medium, this is why I find it so inspiring. With this new medium, they came up with this new medium of motion picture that they decided to like duck into their dreams and the spiritual ideas. And even though it gets kind of sugar-coated, especially now today, but in the early days, they were having films, you know, even like they were adapting Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. They were adapting, you know, Dracula. And not to just harp on horror films, but those films have a lot of heavy spiritual themes to them. And
vampires.
Absolutely. And even like people would smirk at me when I say this, but even the Wolfman, like lycanthropy and werewolfism, that's like, that's a deep written theme, right? And that's been written about for years. I think Eliphas Levi has even written about that. So it's, I find it so inspiring that these filmmakers in Hollywood and in the birth of cinema, even silent cinema, not just, you know, the universal monsters, but like in silent cinema, they were trying to get down to their deepest, the deepest elements of their spiritual and metaphysical and mystical elements, which they couldn't accomplish in just paintings and photos and, you know,
music.
Yeah. Though I have to say music definitely is the I think that's the older brother. Like music, I think, is the most powerful.
Right on. Well, and you have a film called The Color of Music, which I also, you know, bears a mention. But I want to stay on this subject, though, right now, because it's very interesting to think about. Again, I mean, here we are. I mean, it's not a new medium. The internet is no longer a new medium, but it's newer. It's one of the newer mediums, and as a platform to communicate and come up with ideas, higher concepts that aren't necessarily going to be monitored or paid for by, I don't know, the church. I mean, I'm going back to the 20s, because who were the patrons of those artists and the paintings that they were painting back in the time? I mean,
I think
obviously
that would be more independently, because I think Van Gogh was, his brother paid for half of his life.
And right.
Jackson Pollock was Peggy Guggenheim, I believe, so, and his wife as well. So,
well, and that's 20th century. I mean, you go back way, you know, earlier. Oh, you're talking. 18th century. I mean, it was definitely had to be, you know, I think the subject matter was dictated by the patron.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I just think in the 20s, because you're talking about, I mean, the documentary Hollywood is definitely talking about that era, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And starting.
How that idea began. So I can't talk much about how and why. I mean, Annie Besant, A.P. Warrington was essentially the founder of the Crotona that we know in Beechwood. Not the Ojai Crotona, but the Crotona that's in Beechwood, A.P. Warrington found the location. And it's interesting. I've read the letters, the correspondences between him and Annie Besant. And he was asking for her permission, because Annie Besant at that point was one of the heads of the Theosophical Society. And I think she might have been in India at the time. I could be wrong at this, but and she gave A.P. Warrington permission to, you know, break ground and create this spiritual center, which is now Crotona, which we know. And at that point, that whole location and that our neighborhood in Beechwood, that whole area was just, you know, orange groves and fields and hills, and they built this commune style area on it with a lot of, there's other houses around, and they used to actually put on spiritual performances too. I believe The Light of Asia was the first theater performance they put on, and they used to put on plays, and that's kind of how it began. And certain celebrities used to filter through there. Bela Lugosi, obviously, he was a big friend of Manly Palmer Hall as well, but he would come through there. I think there's stories that even Lon Chaney lived in at one point in Crotona. And it was just like the spiritual hub. And they believed, Annie Besant and A.P. Warrington believed that that location was a vortex of sorts. And that's where they wanted to put it. And it kind of began from there, at least in North America. You know, that was probably the beginning. I know now there was stuff happening in New York at that time. But that was definitely like a monumental moment in spiritualism, for sure. Like in North America,
right on.
I mean, Crotona is the hub of like everything. Like, it's so crazy. Like in Beechwood, like now it's apartments. It's still beautiful, and my dear friend Leanne like keeps it up, and you know she does her historical research, and the place is beautiful. And but that place, like when you walk in, there's this energy and there's this vibe, because you know, like back in the day, that's where spirituality really hit California, and it really hit Los Angeles. And they couldn't have found a more beautiful location. My curiosity especially when I was making the movie, though, is we all see Mount Lee as, you know, the Hollywood sign.
Right.
It's the Hollywood sign. When we fly in to LA, we see it, and you know, you get starstruck over it and all this stuff. But like, they found it before the sign was there, before anything was there. So, and then Bronson Caves and all of that stuff.
Right.
And like, they found this location and they deemed it worthy to basically have their headquarters of the Theosophical Society in Beechwood Canyon. Now that's crazy. They could be anywhere in the United States and they found Beechwood Canyon.
Right.
And I find that was like a big inspiration for me when I was making the film. I was like, well, what is it? And then what happened was then the Vedanta Society shows up, and the Vedanta Church of Hollywood shows up. And then the Besant Lodge happens when, you know, after half the Theosophists go to Ojai. And then the Manly Palmer Hall shows up, and he was just like, hey, we're going to make the Philosophical Research Society right down the street. And all the Buddhist temples that are around there as well. It's fascinating to me that one location, Beechwood and the surrounding neighborhoods, just attracted all of this incredible spiritual energy. It's amazing to me. Never in all of my travels, I've never seen a location or an area that has that much spiritual, in the United States, that much spiritual, like concentrated institutions.
Well, you know? Right. That isn't like Machu Picchu I don't even know.
Right, right. In America.
In the US. But, you know, but Courtney, look at it this way also. Let's just add to that and bringing it back to the topic of the show. So here we are in Hollywood, right? And this is, and yet it's a major hub for this new medium that's happening for filmmaking.
Yeah.
So many of the people involved in the stories that were being told, and it just goes on and on. I mean, imagine a Wizard of Oz, for example, which is a favorite movie of mine, but very magical film. And that was what was happening in this town that would then grow on and blossom to be this major industry.
Yeah. And, you know, there's stories of certain producers and certain executives that were intertwined with, let's say, more mystical, theosophical, spiritual people who were in the area at that time. So the influence of spiritualism into Hollywood, I was going to bring up Wizard of Oz before, that is I smile thinking about it. Like, Hollywood was basically developed through a spiritual thought. You know, it goes different ways now, but like, you know, film was invented before Hollywood, but Hollywood happened to become this like center of spirituality and mysticism. And the films were definitely, many, many at least, were influenced by these different ideas. And I think that's not a coincidence.
I know. That's really, really, really interesting. So it's a great way to look at it. And I'd like to ask you, you know, again, going to one of the points in your bio that said, that you at one point were enjoying making horror films. So just kind of curious about that, because we're talking about spirituality, but a lot of times with some of this creepy stuff, I mean, it definitely takes us into this sort of imaginary realm, which goes to the dark side. But either way, I'll take that imaginary realm, because there's also that potential for light.
We need the dark side.
Well, it's duality, right?
Yeah, so. Duality. And we need the dark side. And I often say that, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of the most meditative films I've ever seen, just as a joke. But I was born and raised on horror films. And I, interestingly enough, a lot of the films that we had been discussing, like, you know, the early Bela Lugosi, Dracula, and Boris Karloff, Frankenstein, a lot of those were based off of kind of spiritual, mystical texts.
Yes.
And I tried my hand at making horror films because I just loved watching them. I wasn't that good at it. Documentary is where I seem to enjoy the most. But I don't mind. And in fact, I find I can get really inspired by seeing really crazy movies, and I've seen wild, rare, violent films. I've also, like, I'm also a big fan of punk music, and I don't think if it inspires you, you have to take what you can from it and utilize it. So I know it's kind of a strange situation when, you know, you're coming from this documentary spiritual background, and then there's this horror movie stuff happening. But I actually I find that horror movies can be rather therapeutic sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean, interesting, because there's clearly, it's huge. And it's, as you know, we're taping, it is, we're tiptoeing towards.
I mean, even like with The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite films. I mean, it's hard to say because it's terrifying. And yet I don't know. It was a very powerful film to me. So what is it? What do we love about the creepy? Why do we want to see that? I mean, apparently the market for horror films are teenage girls. I mean, girls go to scary movies.
I think it's getting more intelligent. I think, like, in the beginning, sure, the shock factor and the roller coaster ride idea, and, you know, you buy the ticket, you take the ride. But it seems like with the new horror filmmakers these days, Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, they seem to be pulling in a lot of these great, you know, more intellectual ideas. So I think I mean, talking about horror films, like, even Clive Barker, and back in, like, the early 80s, Alien, Ridley Scott, and, like, horror is an intelligent genre. I just think it got, like, a bad rap because there's a lot of, like, B movies that came out and grabbed the formula and kind of just, like,
had fun.
Terrible work out of it. Right. Yeah, had fun with it. And felt like, and there was, like, franchises with 13 movies of a guy in the woods with a machete or something. But, like, the idea of horror is really important. I sincerely believe this. Like, the idea, because it's like, we all need that dark side. We all need that. I think it's appealing to people because they need a moment to, like, kind of, like, connect with a certain element and a certain dark side. Horror is really underrated. It really is. And it gets a bad rap. I actually got laughed at by who was it? I think it might have been Dr. Heller, where I was asked what type of movies I made when I first arrived at the Philosophical Research Society, and I said I make horror movies because that was the last film I had made before I got into the PRS. And I got laughed.
Oh, really?
Come on, like,
have some fun here.
Like a serious thing, yeah.
No, but it's
it might not have been Dr. Heller, but it was someone around. It like kind of like chuckled because I said I make horror
Smirked.
Movies.
Smirked. Yeah. Well, no, I think we like to. I mean, we're intrigued by the mysterious, and horror is one part of it. And, you know, I use the term paranormal, and that doesn't have to be creepy. It can
be. Not at all.
It can
it
be.
Just means something that we can't wrap our heads around with our the consciousness that we have right now in our skulls right now. All paranormal means is just something that would be something we can't explain, but is real. You know, it's there. I just came back, actually, interestingly enough, as a fun anecdote. I'm at my friend Heather's house right here, and she's a paranormal investigator, and we just came back from the West Virginia State Penitentiary, and we did a paranormal investigation. And I have to say, like, it was pretty crazy. I'm like, why would I put myself in that kind of situation? I don't know. Why would somebody put themselves in that situation when you go to an abandoned prison and walk into death row and pitch dark and, you know, lay on the bunk of a guy who, like, why would somebody do that, you know? And so it's hard to explain, but I think that goes with, like, the horror movie thing. If you're really scared of, you know, if you're just really scared of, like, movies or horror movies, why would you go see Texas Chainsaw Massacre? But people do, and they make a lot of money. It's a fascinating situation.
Very much. So, okay, so you, it doesn't sound like you're doing as much around horror, but I feel that you are still doing more in the metaphysical paranormal genre. Is that right?
Nonstop.
So yeah, tell us about The Color of Music and just, you know, broad strokes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. The Color of Music was based off of a book that Manly Palmer Hall, the founder of the Philosophical Research Society, had written called The Therapeutic Values of Music. And it's about, you know, obviously Pythagoras and Pythagorean theorem and how tones and notes have colors, the vibrations have healing possibilities. And so in the documentary, I interview a lot of incredible individuals who are both musicians, artists, philosophers. And we go into the idea that, you know, music therapy was actually, it's arguable, but they started using music therapy in the United States right after World War II, when the soldiers who were wounded would come home and they would use music therapy for that. They would help them with music and sounds. And it kind of leads me to, like, at the film goes through how music definitely helped people get over horrible times and struggles in their life, and how people utilize music for, you know, healing capabilities. And it's interesting because now, you know, you can buy a ticket for like $30 and go to a sound bath, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's now like a thing.
It is.
But back in the day, it wasn't by any means. I don't think anybody even knew what a sound bowl was in America at that point. You know, I could be wrong, but so that's what The Color of Music is about. I'm so honored to have all the people who were involved in that film. That was incredible.
Well, I can't wait to see that one as well. And again, you can check out Courtney's Vimeo channel via his website to see more. And what's next for you, Courtney?
Yeah, so I'm here in Pittsburgh and I'm working with a dear friend of mine, and we're kind of exploring in the paranormal realm. There's a project happening right now that's definitely steeped in the paranormal, and I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
We're, like, really excited about it. It
seems like a sweet spot for you. It seems like an area of fascination.
Of course.
Well, no, it is. I mean, hey, why am I doing the show? I mean, we're looking for ways for people to transcend. I mean, because if you get stuck in sort of the day-to-day 3D world, it just feels heavy.
Well, that's the other thing. And I will have to say, like, if something is deemed dark and kind of creepy and weird, if the person observing it or exploring it finds inspiration and it's doing no harm to anybody, and they find inspiration, like, there it is. That's wonderful. And that's, like, how to heighten that, elevate that idea, that creativity idea, that I think everything has to be done with a positive intention. And even if it's scary or considered creepy, like, or eerie, you know, like a horror movie, it has to be done with the most positive of all intentions, because there are definitely some therapeutic elements to some of these ideas, for sure, as dark as they can be. And I'm not talking about like darkness. I'm just talking about like if someone's scared of the paranormal or anything like that, right. Like
creepy.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's and as we wrap up, I'd like to kind of reflect, as we've kind of touched a little bit on, you know, your body of work. I know there's a lot of other sort of earlier films in the 2000s that you worked on, like you say, locality. Yeah. I think you were in Brooklyn, right? You were in New York.
For a long time, yeah.
And for example, and I think that you like to draw from the personality as well as a location, but with a higher source at hand. And again, thinking about your father and how that was a really breakthrough for you in filmmaking.
I actually never thought about that before, but that's a great observation, because now it's, I had done a short documentary called The Hole back in 2010 about a strange neighborhood in Brooklyn on the Brooklyn-Queens border, deemed The Hole, where it was a body dumping ground for the mob, and it's the home of the Black Cowboy Federation. And the last shot of the movie is looking down on the whole neighborhood. And it kind of has that, like, it's like a pretty Wings of Desire, Wim Wenders moment, I guess. I didn't even think about that. But now, like, you just saying that, it's like, oh, okay.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, there's, happy to help.
Yeah, right? Like, there's always going to be a heightened spiritual element to everything I do, even if the medium or the genre or the subject matter doesn't seem spiritual, there's always going to have to be. I like, because I've always been influenced by Werner Herzog for finding the ecstatic truth.
Right on.
And that's kind of what, so I could film a movie about anything, but there's going to always be some form of, and I'm not in a preachy way, but there's definitely always going to be a spiritual element to it, in a sense, because I never want to preach to anybody, but it's just who I am.
It's who you are. That's what I, and no, we thank you for bringing that through. And, you know, as I said in the beginning, there's something just so immersive about film that you really, it's wonderful to be able to trust the filmmaker. And as you feed us light, sound, story.
Yeah, I want people to be happy and at peace. And when we were doing those experimental visuals with the sound bath and in the PRS auditorium, it was so wonderful to watch people meditating on these films. They're finding healing. They're finding, that's all. The medium is so powerful. It would be senseless to use it for a negative reason. You have to use this medium to uplift, inspire, and not saying that I'm doing that, because I don't know if people even like my work, but I'm just saying, like, I think the medium is so powerful that you have to.
It's like a responsibility.
It's a responsibility. If you're going to pick up a film camera, you have to make sure that people are going to at least find some form of inspiration or an uplifting feeling to it. It doesn't have to be this whole glory thing, but like this whole like big idea, but like they have to walk away feeling inspired.
Cheers. I believe that
the worst thing ever is walking away from a movie and just feeling blasé about it and just not inspired by it, you know.
Well, carry on. I think with that formula, there's, you know, there's going to be much more to come from you in a wonderful way. And we're excited, and we'll keep a close look on things. And I feel like there's going to be a part two, Courtney, because you're doing such amazing work. So
we'll
see you over at the Philosophical Research Society. Maybe we can do some coverage over there.
Absolutely.
I really, really appreciate it.
For sure.
It was amazing to talk to you.
Yeah, amazing to talk to you too, Bonnie. Thank you.
All right. Until the next time. Namaste.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. This has been a really great episode of Truth Be Told Transformation. We have a new show every Wednesday, as well as Tony Sweet live on Fridays at 3 p.m. And Robert Hensley also is on Mondays. So I'm Bonnie Burkard, and we thank you for watching and sharing and liking and subscribing. Until the next time, shine on.